So, tonight, I want to talk a little bit about the different kinds of practices that we do in Balmer's Way Zen. I'm going to spend some time talking about Shikan Taza, which is what we were hearing in some of Hong Zhi's words earlier. So we start with everybody starts with breath practice. That's the beginning instruction that we give, and that's what we work with people on for, sometimes years. So there's different kinds of breath practice. There's counting the breath, and then at a certain point we let go of the numbers, and we just follow the breath. And then are just simply practicing breath awareness, or just being the breath. And the breath practice that we start with is like building a scaffolding around the outside of a structure of like a building that you're renovating or something. This scaffolding is crucially important to the process, but is not the thing in itself. I don't want to underemphasize the importance of working with the breath, because even as we're doing that, we're practicing this fundamental skill of opening the hand of thought, of letting go, of turning away, turn around from the stream of thoughts, as Hong Zhi says. Each time we do that, we're practicing honing this skill of being able to be choicefully present and free amid the complications and difficulties and suffering of our lives. So breath practice is complete venue to practice those things. And then at a certain point, we go a step further, though, and we start dismantling that structure, the scaffolding that we've built with the breath practice. Breath practice comes with very concrete instructions. Those concrete instructions are very valuable in the beginning exploration of the path, in beginning to cultivate this capacity to sit still and present, and to attend to the goings on of the mind, and sometimes concentration develops in that as a side effect, but we don't emphasize the concentration because the value is in just being aware of the mind doing what it's doing, and then it moves away, coming back. But then we dismantle those concrete instructions, and we do that in Balmer's Way. We do that in one of two ways, either with koans, for which you pretty much get insufficient direction on how to work with them and use them, or in Shikan Taza, just sitting, which you also, pretty much everybody will feel that they get inadequate explanation of how to do that. One of the things that's interesting about the ways we practice in Boundless Way is that even people working on koans are doing it within the context of Shikan Taza. And so, I do interviews with folks, and people will come in and say, my practice is Shikan Taza, and I'm also working on koan. And lots of people in Boundless Way kind of find that path to be valuable. The guidance that we give to people working on koans is to just be sitting with the breath, or just be sitting in Shikan Taza and drop in the koan, and then return to your breath, or to your Shikan Taza. But those things are ways of starting to dismantle the scaffolding, starting to move out beyond the confines of a limited definition of zazen into a increasingly comprehensive and boundaryless practice. What do koans do? In my experience, koans teach kind of they're training in like a handful of crucially important kind of truths. Not really concepts or ideas, but truths and realities that you verify for yourself. Now, the things that koans teach are things that we hear, over and over in the chants, in the texts, in the Dharma koans. But we have to realize them for ourselves. We have to really deeply find those truths in ourselves, and that's what koans help with. And those truths are that form is exactly emptiness, that emptiness is exactly form. They're the truths, they're the realization of thusness, things as they are, just this is it. And they're coming to see thusness as itself an expression of emptiness. It teaches koans kind of teach a fluid capacity to move between the perspectives of the absolute and the relative, of the many and the one. That from the beginning nothing is hidden. But not everybody is disposed towards koans, and koans aren't useful for all kind of folks and frames of mind. And even for people for whom koans are useful, there is still this practice of Shikin Taisen. So now to talk a little bit about Shikin Taisen. So one of the so one of the other important things that both koans and Shikin Taisen teach is and also breath practice teaches the recognition of mental formations as mental formations, as things that arise in the mind-body universe experience as just things that arise in the mind-body universe experience. And there's just the one category of thing. There's mental formations, anything we perceive, conceive of, discriminate, feel impelled towards through volition, are aware of all of those things, all of the things that the Heart Sutra lists are categories of mental formations. And this practice is often about recognizing mental formations just as mental formations. Or as Hongzhi says in one of these pieces, just when involved in deliberation, turn around from the stream of thoughts. Another way that Hongzhi puts it in a piece I didn't read is to stay with just that as that. Stay with just this as this. because that is a kind of poetical expression of practicing thusness and like recognizing mental formations as mental formations. So the thing about Chi Composite, the thing about all of this is that the important part of it can't really be expressed. And all of these practices, and all especially of these words about these practices, are just tools, they're just skillful means, they're just kind of pointers for you to find for yourself the thing that gave rise to these words in someone else. From a kind of humorous perspective, koans and Chi Composite are just the things that we do while we are not yet realized that there's nothing to do. So this aspect that we call opening the hand of thought that we do in breath practice and in Chi Composite, Dogen expresses in this way whenever a thought occurs, be aware of it. As soon as you are aware of it, it will vanish. And then Dogen goes on to say, if you remain for a long period of time forgetful of objects, which means just recognizing thoughts as thoughts, mental formations as mental formations, without getting entrapped and sucked into the stories they tell about being about something, that there's you with this thought, which is a thing that's about that over there. But if you just take that whole kind of process as the one thing arising, as the mental formation arising, Dogen calls that being forgetful of objects. And then he says, you will naturally become unified. This is the essential art of Zazen. But of course you can't actually become unified. You already are unified. And this practice of Chi Composite is a practice of expressing it. So in looking at Hongzhi, Hongzhi is a Chinese master who was around two or three generations before Dogen and was extremely influential on Dogen's own Chinese teacher. And Chi Composite, what we translate as just sitting, is the term that Dogen uses to describe his practice. Hongzhi uses the term silent illumination, sitting in silent illumination, with his Dogen of silent illumination. The silent refers to the not limited to the small sphere of words and concepts, and the illumination refers to kind of the pervading luminous quality of this practice. This Hongzhi also calls this residing in the clear circle of brightness. The first of the pieces that I read during the Zazen, you must completely withdraw from the invisible pounding and weaving of your ingrained ideas. You must completely withdraw from the invisible pounding and weaving of your ingrained ideas. This is just more language to talk about that thing of opening the hand of thought, recognizing mental formations as mental formations, staying with just this as this. And not getting captured in the storytelling mind, in the stories that the mind secretes, in the stories of experience, in the stories of meditation, in the stories of wishing, and instead just recognizing that those are things that are arising in this silently illuminated clear circle of brightness. So we are fundamentally that clear circle of brightness. Feng Xie says, we all, and he says have, but I also want to say are, the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. So, you must completely withdraw from the invisible, pounding and weaving. That's very good. Pounding and weaving is a good way of describing kind of the quality of the captured aspect of being in the of the experience that arises before we recognize mental formations as mental formations and see mental formations as truths in themselves. And withdrawing just means getting space from moving out of the sphere, the little kind of narrow capsule of defined something or other that these mental formations are, and instead moving into this luminous spaciousness and just recognizing within that context that there is a thing arising. Invisible pounding and weaving of your ingrained ideas. So this is, and ingrained ideas is a really beautiful phrase, I think, for the kind of karmic habit patterns, the habit energy of our mind doing the things that it has overlearned, the things that it has been doing since and our stories about the fundamental problem of being, you know, that there must be something wrong. But none of this practice is about replacing one set of ingrained ideas with another set of more enlightened ingrained ideas. Those still are just two equal examples of mental formations. And the practice of silent illumination is to pull back from getting caught in any mental formations and instead residing in dwelling in the luminous space around and through everything. If you want to be rid of this invisible turmoil, you must just sit through it and let go of everything. And of course, we all come to Zazen because we want to be rid of this invisible turmoil. And what we all realize, at some point to a greater or lesser degree, is that the actual way that we're rid of it isn't by purging this turmoil out of our experience, but instead extracting ourselves from the limitation of that turmoil. So from defining ourselves as that problem, as that story, as that ingrained idea and habit pattern. And so Barry Magid, a modern teacher, says that problems don't disappear from our life, they disappear into our life. Instead of being limited and constrained by these things, we instead are able to kind of capaciously, spaciously allow that turmoil to arise and pass away. And we are touching the calm, the equanimity, what Hongzhi calls serenity, that is unbothered, unmarred by, unconcerned with the mere arising of these mental formations, regardless of the intensity of the story, of the turmoil that they're telling us. And so if you want to be rid of this invisible turmoil, you must just sit through it and let go of everything. And really, you don't have any other choice. There's not like a second option that you could instead be doing. That's just an acknowledgement of the reality of these things. You just sit through it and let go of everything. And this let go is another expression of this turning around from the stream of thoughts, or opening the hand of thought, or recognizing mental formations as mental formations, just this as this. Attain fulfillment and illuminate thoroughly. Light and shadow all together forgotten. Light and shadow here is an expression of insider delusion, seeing clearly or not seeing clearly. And again, all of those things are categories of mental formation, and this is a practice that is bigger. Attain fulfillment and illuminate thoroughly. So Shikantaza also is a practice founded on faith, and which means that we don't start with people working on Shikantaza until they have some kind of direct experience, some kind of direct intimation of, oh, I see, everything is, you know, perfect, originally complete. Even if it's just kind of a sliver of that, even if then it gets completely forgotten, but that those become the foundation for faith. And that is the fulfillment that we can attain and connect to in anyone. And we can illuminate thoroughly by shifting the what we think we are from this thought, this turmoil, to instead this luminous silence. And once we become that luminous silence, then everything is thoroughly illuminated, and we illuminate thoroughly. Light and shadow altogether forgotten. And whether or not you know it or experience it, or whether or not you're experiencing silence, illumination, or turmoil, that altogether forgotten. And then, so one of my favorite parts here is accept your function and be wholly satisfied. Accept your function. Elsewhere he says, here you exert energy and naturally without impediments comprehend all the shiftings of mind and reality and accept your function. And elsewhere he, Hongzhi says, only intimate awareness appears complete everywhere. Let yourself accept it. Often what we're up against is our certainty that this can't be it. Advising us on how to do that. And accepting your function. Accepting your function means accepting your role, your birth within karma, within life and death, within, you know, your specific history, within all of the difficulties that arise in your mind, all of those formations, all of the pain and unsatisfactoriness of being human, of sickness, old age, death, loss, change, and the function that we have in the world within with within our families, within our relationships. So accepting all of that, that functioning, and being wholly satisfied. So, since that took so long, I'm not going to go into detail on this second one, although we have been repeatedly talking about this one line from it, just when involved in in deliberations. So whenever you fall into doing, into figuring, into stories, turn around from the stream of thoughts. Oars pulled in, the solitary boats drift past without difficulty. And that is a description of turning around from the stream of thoughts. And the other thing I just want to point to in the second one is, in upright practice, let go from the edge of the high cliff, not grabbing anything. Let go from the edge of the high cliff, not grabbing anything. We so often want to find security, solid ground, absolute truth that we can grab onto in our zazen, and especially in our shikhen kaza, especially when we're sure we don't understand it correctly. And the advice from Hongshe, the crucial thing to do is to let go and just go into that space beyond your knowing, beyond your certainty, beyond what you think you can or can't do, or are not doing, are or are not doing. Not grabbing into anything. So people often, when they're practicing shikhen kaza, they will kind of come up with their own idea of what it means to practice shikhen kaza, and so that they'll practice focusing on the breath for a little while, and then when they feel good and calm and settled, then they practice. Then they get down to the business of practicing shikhen kaza. But you don't have to be in any state of mind. You don't have to be calm and focused and settled, because that is just three different mental formations. Just more description. And so to just step into that that void, that off the cliff of knowing, off this cliff of comfort, off the cliff of rule books or playbooks or strategies or techniques. Not grabbing into anything. So, that's part of my description. So, thank you guys. And if anybody wants to comment or reflect or something, I would be really, really interested to hear what you guys think about it.
The first sentence that said that the pounding breathing.
Mm-hmm.
I see that as the as another way of talking about the effort and the striving that go on. And so I see that as pounding and breathing as equivalents of the physical actions one does in doing things in their lives. So it's the same thing as the manipulations you do inside your head moment to moment to adjust life to what you think it should be.
Right. Yeah. And then we bring those mm-hmm. those same learned patterns of trying to adjust things to the way we think it should be mm-hmm. to our shikhen kaza. Mm-hmm. And try to adjust that to the way we think it should be. To pounding and moving.
You know, I think it's very possible, it's very easy to get to a state where you almost give yourself a headache trying to be at ease, kind of thing.
Right.
Trying to center yourself.
You mean I'm really going to be at ease now? Yeah, I'm at ease!
Right. And so, what happens then? What is what is the alternative, or what do you do when you notice that?
Start laughing. It's sort of, you know, the absurdity of it all. think it is, Shikantaza is feeling what it's like merely to see everything that's going on. In your head, and just see it without straining to see it, without breaking a sweat trying to see it, and noticing the things you're avoiding seeing, and at the same time. Not making this a big project inside your head.
And yeah, so and part of the analogy there, you know. So this again comes back to from the beginning, nothing is hidden, and noticing what arises and recognizing those things as phenomena is exactly as difficult as. Opening your eyes and trying to see what's in the room, you know? You don't need to just, I'm gonna see that chair. Oh, I'm sure there's a, it's just right there. There it is. There it is. There's the wall. There's the chair. Here's the striving. Here's the doubt. Here's the pounding. It's right there. And that is a perfect description.
I think, at least for me, while trying to be open. See all things, at least in myself, I recognize that there's always a tendency to not quite look over there in that direction. And at the same time, not do the, you know, break a sweat like, okay, I'm really going to be looking everywhere, and I'm really going to be trying to see everything that goes on, and I end up with the headache again.
And so there's the things that you see when you turn and look, and there's that's one kind of mental formation. And another mental formation is the I just don't want to look over there, right? And so to just see that as that, rather than believing its story of there's something over there and you need to turn and look at that instead. Just to notice that right here, right in front of you, is the incredibly overwhelming urge to not look over there. And just to leave it at that. And this process kind of lets us metabolize our life in the world. And so we do start to see in a meaningful real way some of the things that we turn on.
You notice that you're not seeing something difficult. I'm looking here, I'm looking there, I'm not seeing, there's something over there, but I don't know what it is. That's always like, you can't quite get there, but it,
and so what you're seeing is an experience of lack, an experience of blindness, an experience of darkness. And you don't get to replace that darkness. Some poet, and I'm not sure if it's a modern poet or copying an ancient person, or I don't know. You can't get to know the dark with a torch.
think that's part of the bringing all these teachings to yourself,
correctly transmitting the Dharma to yourself. Are you going for Dogen there?
You have to realize these teachings yourself. So, yeah, there is the thing of you have to make that mistake yourself before you understood that that was a mistake.
But you can get to know the dark. You just can't do it with a torch.
Yeah.
Do
not look for the light.
Right, within light there is darkness, but do not try to understand the darkness. Within darkness there is light, but do not look for that. That's the exact thing.
I really like the example of the chair, just look at the chair. Because I think that summarizes the whole thing. Like, if you tell me, look at Buddha over there, and then you feel like, okay, but how? And then it's you just say, well, just look, you know. What else, what other instruction do you need? But you still feel like that. But I must, please say that, like, there must be a way in which I be sure, that I'm looking in the right way. So I guess that's when you try to look at different ways, like with only one eye, or exactly. But not even, like when you say that, giving a headache, I used to have that headache before, but now I feel I'm on a different stage, if you can call it a stage, in which I say, yeah, I know there's no right way, I know there's no wrong way, but what if I just try to look, you know, from this side? And then I say to myself, no, I'm not going to know if it's right or not, yeah, but what if, you know? So it feels like more fun now, not a headache, but, you know, even though you know that it's just mental formations. It's hard not to.
And so,
it would be really nice if someone could give me some clear set of instructions. You can make a mini instruction, but all I have to do is follow this set of instructions, and I get there and I'm done. That would be like so nice.
Or like, show me. Show me how to look at the book.
That kind of laughter, you know, that kind of humorous, that is itself a expression of patience and compassion towards ourselves and of the universe towards us, and that's one of many ways in which the Dharma is. And to return for a moment to the analogy of the chair. In the psychology of Buddhism, which is different from Western psychology, there are not five sense organs, there are six sense organs. And the sixth sense organ is the mind. And the thing that it senses is mental formations. And it senses mental formations in exactly the same way that the eye senses form. It senses the chair. And so the thing that is appearing to your mind is the thing that appears to minds, just as the thing that is appearing to your eye is the things that appear to minds.
I reminded of a saying of my favorite Buddhist, Yogi Berra. He says, in baseball, you don't know nothing. I think you can sort of broaden that out.
Yeah.
You don't know nothing. Get rid of it.
Sorry.
And when we take up the practice of the precepts, the first pure precepts, it is not known. Giving up fixed ideas about ourselves and the universe. What do you guys think of this Hongzhe guy?
That's pretty good.
How do you spell the second part of his name?
It's H-O-N-G-Z-H-I. And it's kind of pronounced zh. Sure.
What is it?
Hong zh.
Oh, okay.
So is this like Dogen's teacher's teacher or something like that? Or
not? It's not a, it's not, yeah, but, Dogen's teacher knew of Hong zh through his writings and was affected by him and found it useful and referred to him as an ancient Buddha.
Is he Chinese?
He's Chinese, yeah. Mm-hmm.
His Dogen father from China.
And so, so we use the word Soto to refer to that lineage, but that's a Japanese word. But Hong zh was part of the Saodong, which is the Chinese pronunciation, which is the Chinese word that became the Japanese word Soto. Yeah, I like the oars pulled in.
It's such an image of, I get this image of, you read the Wind in the Willows, frog and toad, so just floating down this nice little stream in this nice little way.
What's the thing that confused me is the part about archery that you raised as well. Is this not, how do you not know, not just reading another story, and how do you find it's actually you without instructing something? I remember I'm a rookie, 4 weeks into this.
And so, rather than me stealing from you by answering that question, I'm going to say that is exactly the right question. So, And you can even use that question as a kind of touchstone, a place to check back in over and over again to notice whether you just made up a set of rules and still replacing them. So let's go back to our seats and do the bows.